God,
grant me the serenity
to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference.
The Simple Actions Group wishes to extend a warm welcome to everyone in attendance today. These premises are non-smoking. Our group is welcome to use this room and the restrooms exclusively. Is there anyone in their first 30 days of sobriety we would like to welcome you?
Stephanie. Hey, Stephanie, welcome.
On Zoom, you can raise your hand and someone will chat with you. Is anyone visiting from out of town or new to the meeting? Yes.
Hey, Kathy. Hello.
Hi, Kathy. Welcome.
Welcome. At this time, please silence your cell phones. Also, we respectfully ask that those present please refrain from unnecessary moving around the room. This will keep distractions and disturbances to a minimum and allow everyone to listen uninterrupted. Forward to the book Alcoholics Anonymous. We of Alcoholics Anonymous are more than 100 men and women who have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body. To show other alcoholics precisely how we have recovered is the main purpose of this book. For them, we hope these pages will prove so convincing that no further altercation will be necessary. We think this account of our experiences will help everyone to better understand the alcoholic. Many do not comprehend that the alcoholic is a very sick person. And besides, we are sure that our way of living has its advantages for all. It is the purpose of this meeting to carry that clear message and to focus on precisely how to recover from the illness of alcoholism by taking AA's simple actions. The format of this meeting is an open big book step study. As a group, we recognize the power of one alcoholic identifying with another alcoholic, sharing their experience, strength, and hope out of the book Alcoholics Anonymous. This evening, we are discussing step two. Please welcome our panel this evening, Amy and JoJo. I will read the first paragraph on page 44, and then the panel will share for a few minutes on the reading. Step two, came to believe that a power greater than ourselves could restore us to sanity. Page 44. In the preceding chapters, you have learned something of alcoholism. We hope we have made it clear the distinction between the alcoholic and the non-alcoholic. If, when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience may conquer. To one who feels he is an atheist or agnostic, such an experience seems impossible. But to continue as he is means disaster, especially if he's an alcoholic of the hopeless variety. To be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Jojo?
All right. My name's Jojo. I'm definitely an alcoholic. That's the only thing I'm sure of, really. I've thrown out all my old ideas, but I know I'm an alcoholic. I have no idea where this is going to go. I'm really grateful for the opportunity to come up here and share my step two experience. I'm tired. I didn't sleep much. I slept less than an hour. I'm nervous. My heart is beating. My palms are sweating.
What's that? Coffee,
I know, but I got to. And that's right where I like to be. That's where the good stuff happens. So, I put up big tents for a living and we're staring down the face of a hurricane. So I've just been a mess. And I've also decided to resubmit myself to my four step. And it turns out I've been wrong about a bunch of stuff again. And it's been a hard pill to swallow. So I've been sitting in that for a little while. So I'm nice and uneasy, which is it's pretty cool. My step two experience was really natural and pure and unfiltered because I came to Alcoholics Anonymous without any prejudice towards religion or spirituality. Ironically, I spent most of my youth at a hippie commune out in Louisa County called Twin Oaks. And I was just a mess, man. I was a tornado. I partied the whole time, and people would spit whatever about whatever their spiritual beliefs were. And it just got in the way of my partying and was just a party favorite really to me to listen to. And But step two came real natural. It's real undeniable for me. And I can taste it still. I can taste the right when it came. Step two came to me on my third day of sobriety. And the reason it came to me on my third day of sobriety is because I've never had a third day of sobriety. I've been an everyday drinker since I was a teenager. I mean, I started drinking at 13. I was an everyday drinker at 16. Even then I knew I was an alcoholic. I knew it my whole life. And then, so I'm 40 now. So for 20 plus years, I was an everyday drinker. The last 15 years, I was a morning and night drinker. The last 10 years, I was probably a maintenance drinker, where I had to just keep my BAC, like the movie Speed, where like, if they go below 80, they explode. Like if my BAC dropped below 0.08, I would explode. So I kept it like there. And, even waking up in the middle of the night and just keeping that fire burning, you know, that's how I rolled. That, and it's just how I did it. And then, so the last 5 years, I was a hopeless, miserable, beaten down drunk that wanted to stop drinking and I couldn't. And then the last year, before I came to Alcoholics Anonymous, I was a dying alcoholic. I'd gotten liver cirrhosis, jaundice, my skin was yellow, I had kidney failure. I like to think I had brain damage, but that could be natural. But I'm going to say that I had brain damage. Just I could take the pressure off of me a little bit. And, you know, and I had, God, I just wanted to stop drinking and I couldn't. I gave away everything I had, you know, had worked so hard for. You know, I had times, like Bill said, I had times in my life that were really successful alcoholically. And I traded it all away for another drink. I had a good family. I had a girl that loved me. I had stepkids. I had a business that I started it. And I gave it away for another drink. And I spent the last 5 years of my drinking career in a unfurnished apartment as a carpenter. And I'm not a carpenter. It got to the point where I couldn't live in that house anymore. And I saw a Craigslist ad that was asking for a carpenter. So I applied. And at that point that they said, yes, I was a carpenter. So I learned that trade and I drank through it. And I remember just like sitting in a unfurnished room, just with beer cans and bourbon bottles around me, and just sad. And I couldn't give it up. And then finally, my last year, I had reached out to my dad, who I really didn't have a relationship. He's the reason I'm in Tidewater. He lives in Portsmouth. And I said, I'm dying, man. I can't do this anymore. I was like, can you help me? And he said, you can come live with me. He's an alcoholic, too. So, you know, it was painful for him to see his son dying from alcoholism while drinking every day. And that's the power. That's the cunning, baffling, powerful part of alcoholism. You know, it's not easy for a parent to drink and watch their kid die from drinking. So if you think that this thing messes around, it don't. I remember, you know, I spent 5 years living with my ex, and she would tell me all the time. She said, I can't live with an alcoholic and I won't live with somebody that can't drink. And neither of us had any knowledge of alcoholism. And, you know, understanding that proposal now, it was impossible for a real alcoholic. I had to abstain completely. I couldn't drink like a gentleman. I remember I traveled for like the last 2 years we lived together. And I wanted to give it up then. I was looking for a way to stop. I was unfamiliar with Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm the only sober person in my family. Every other one is a addict or an alcoholic. There's nobody that's gone through this program or recovered. And so once again, just a pure experience with me. And where was I going with that? I remember I traveled. There were a couple times I tried. I went to a Buddhist temple in Canada one time. I was like, maybe the Buddhists will show me how to stop drinking. I remember like going and seeing how they could meditate and watching. I saw this lady that did a vow of silence. And I thought, this is the way. And then while I was thinking this is the way to do it, I pulled over and got a bottle of bourbon. And I went to Salem, Massachusetts one time. This is a true story. I was working there and I said, maybe some witchcraft will take this from me. And I remember like drinking, walking through Salem, Massachusetts, and they have these like stocks in the center of Salem. And I remember getting on my knees there and I was like, please, dead witches, take this damn alcoholism for me. Like whatever's going on, whatever crazy magic y'all got in here, I'll just take it. And I remember thinking that also while I went to the bar. And and then I'd come home and I tried to hide this thing I got carrying on me from this lady that I loved and that loved me. And I would make it, you know, maybe tonight we'd fall asleep. And I remember taking a little head, moving it off my hand and sneaking out and going to the thing, coming back drunk. And And she wouldn't even turn over. And I thought in my delusion that she didn't know and she knew. So anyway, I gave that away. And I couldn't give this thing up. And COVID hit. I was drinking all the time. I lived in Portsmouth now. I didn't have a job. And I was using up all the money I'd saved. And my second run of detox, I went and the doctor pulled me aside and he said, "Mr. Martin, if you drink again, you will surely die. And I don't care because I don't get attached to alcoholics and you don't have the insurance to pay for a liver transplant." And I went home and I drank again. And I learned that you can't scare me into sobriety. Frothy emotional appeal did not suffice. And that's what landed me in the rooms of AA, that right there. Oh, yeah. And I tried to shoot myself, too. Sorry for that. Yeah, the fucking trigger failed. I pulled back a revolver and I had depressed the trigger and I pulled back the hammer and I had put it to my head. And I remember I kind of pulled the punch a little bit and I depressed the hammer a little bit. And the firing pin didn't go off. And I gave the gun to my dad. And then my life went numb. Everybody that spoke to me from then on was just like Charlie Brown. Wah, wah, wah. I couldn't feel. There were people that were coming and hugging me and talking to me. I didn't hear it. It was just gray. There was no joy. I was done. I was hopeless. I was beaten into reasonableness. And I'd Googled self-help groups on Google. And on Reddit, it talked about the cabin in Portsmouth and this thing called AA. And I thought it was group therapy. I thought the reason I drank so much is because I had severe depression. So I was coming to talk to you guys about depression. And if you guys cured my depression, maybe I'd stop drinking. I remember parking, if you know the cabin, there's a tree way, way away from the cabin. And I parked in the back like people full of shame do. And I started moping across that parking lot. My thought process at that time was like, either something's got to be in this building or I don't have a week left. And halfway through, I wanted to turn around. I wanted to give up, such has been my behavior. And as I'm going to turn around and say, screw this, and probably live out the last week or two of my life in a bottle, a guy named Duran said, hey, come on in. He had this big smile and I looked behind me praying that he was talking to somebody else, but he was talking to me. It turns out this guy knew everything about me, except for my name. And he pulled me in this room. And I saw that you guys were happy and it irritated the shit out of me. And once again, I was still in Charlie Brown mode. I didn't hear what y'all had to say to me. It was just wah, 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 wah. I saw the black coffee, but, it had been like an hour, so I was DTing. So I just stared at where the coffee maker was, knowing that it was available if I wanted it. And that was a kind gesture. And I walked out of that meeting and a guy came up to me and he said, "Hey, pal, if I were you, I'd get on your knees tonight." I'd never tried that before. I didn't know what that was, but, I tried it and I went home that night and I got on my knees at the foot of my bed and I wept from the bottom of my heart. And I said, if there's anything out there, you have to take this from me. I can't do this anymore. I'm tired. And I went my first night sober. It was the first night I didn't pull into a bar, or pull into a liquor store, or pull into 7-Eleven to get some beer. And I made it through. And this is the God's honest truth. I woke up like a baby that morning. I was an insomniac for 7 months. In sobriety, I couldn't sleep. I'd go all night. But that night I slept like an infant and I woke up feeling like a child. And I marched right back into an AA room because that's where I had learned how to spend my first night sober. And I just kept coming back. And that's what step two does for me. Step two is the lighthouse. Step two is that little light that shines through the fog in my alcoholic condition and my stress. And even right now, that little glimmer that tells me if I keep pushing forward, there's hope and that there's something in here that loves me and wants my life to be better than I could ever dreamed of. Was I going with that? Yeah, it's the light. So step two is the lighthouse. Hope is the spiritual principle. It cuts through my alcoholic condition still to this day, sitting in my fourth step. What, am I running out of time?
No.
Okay. Even, what's that? Ah, shit. Even in my fourth step, I'm going through some emotional shit. I feel like my chest is tight. I feel like my body aches. I feel like my sternum is just banging. I feel like my head hurts. And step two is still that same thing I found on my knees that night weeping that told me if I push through this and just believe, then my life gets better. And I trust that because that's been my experience so far. So like I said, step two is that hope that no matter what my alcoholic condition is or whatever my current insanity is, it's that belief that it gets better if I keep trudging along. And it's that little glimmer that keeps me going. It's a little whack, but I brought a poem because somebody wrote this, my sentiment, better than I ever thought I could. And I'm sure I'm not the first one to read it here. It's called Hope by Emily Dickinson. Y'all heard of that? It's tight. Mm-hmm. It's pretty good. It says, hope is the thing with feathers that perches in the soul and sings the tune without the words and never stops at all. And sweetest in the gale is heard, and sore must be the storm that could abash the little bird that kept so many warm. I've heard it in the chillest land and on the strangest sea, yet never in extremity it asked a crumb of me. And I like the way she personifies it because step two is that little song inside of my soul that I reach for deep down on the last analysis that just keeps on. And I love that she said it never asked a thing of me because, you know, the other steps ask a lot of me. One, I got to admit some stuff. Three, I got to decide some stuff. Four, I got to write some stuff. But step two just seems to come. And it turns out it's been in there all along, and I just had to learn how to listen. So I got thanks.
Thank you.
I'm an alcoholic. My name is Amy. My sobriety date is May 9th, 1994. Simple Actions is my home group. I have a sponsor. I am actively working the steps with others who are actively working the steps. And I use this first paragraph from page 44 to help people qualify themselves to be here. It's a great description to let me know whether I am not a moderate drinker, not a hard drinker, but that I am in fact a real alcoholic. And what it says is, if when you honestly want to, you find you cannot quit entirely, or if when drinking, you have little control over the amount you take, you are probably alcoholic. If that be the case, you may be suffering from an illness which only a spiritual experience will conquer. And I am like one of the men's stories in More About Alcoholism. Well, actually, Roland Hazard, who said he's a great man for the church. He's got this nailed. I went to Norfolk Christian. I went to a girls' Episcopalian boarding school. I went to a Baptist college. I got degrees in theology and psychology. I absolutely was sure that I had a lock on who God was. And none of that did me any good whatsoever. Not one single bit of any of that information made a difference in my ability to wake up each day and not take a drink. What I found out was that there's a big difference between believing in God and having access to God's power, which was what I needed. I was taught to read this chapter instead of we agnostics and maybe having some blocks around the religious connotations of the world, and to read it instead as we self-reliant. Because what is my current agnosticism? I am currently agnostic in the areas where I'm trying to run the show, where I think that I am in charge. I'm also agnostic in the sense that I think that that everything is all about me and the universe is revolving around me. I went to AA 101 yesterday and I was Zooming in, and the chairperson said, is there anybody on Zoom who wants to share? And because this is how I wake up every day with untreated alcoholism, I didn't even consider that there could be anybody else that he was talking to but me. And I immediately started talking, and somebody else started talking, and I said, oh, is somebody else sharing? And the chairperson said, somebody else was polite enough to raise their hand, Amy. And he caught me on a good day. And I thought that was... And I was amused, but I was looking around the room, and I know there were a couple people who know me that were thinking, oh no. So this is about deflation of ego for me. I don't come to step two in a good mood. I get to step two because I've just been given a death sentence. I have a physical allergy. Doctor's opinion tells me all about that. Bill's story tells me about the progression of this physical allergy. It also alludes to the fact that I am a person who wants to enjoy a certain reputation that I know I don't deserve. I want you all to think that I'm easy breezy, casual, and nonchalant. I'm not. I'm a volcano. Everything's a big deal to me. And alcohol is what tamped down that volcano and kept it from spewing. I also find out in There's a Solution and more about alcoholism that my main problem resides in my head. And there are a lot of great names for the chapter More About Alcoholism. I usually read it as More About Thinking, but it can also be called More About Relapse. It can be called More About Insanity. It can also be called The Truth About Lies, because I'm going to go through this chapter and it's going to tell me all the different things that are wrong with my mind. And I can't stand to hear that because I am the smartest person you're ever going to meet. There's just no way it's possible that this applies to me. But the truth is, when they start reeling out the terms, I do suffer from obsession. I do have ideas that outweigh any other thought. I do suffer from illusions. I see what's there, but I always kind of buff it up a little bit. You know, I mean, a few lies are just going to make a story sound better. So I suffer from illusions, and then I suffer from downright delusions. I actually see things that aren't there at all. And I am absolutely certain that I am correct about what I'm seeing and how I'm assessing reality. And then the insanity is that I go ahead and act as if what I think I see is the truth. And what I think I see all the time is that I'm doing great. I've got it going on. I know exactly what I'm doing. I don't need any help from you. If you have a bad opinion of me, I don't care because you're stupid anyway. I've got this whole long list of reasons of why I'm not like other people. And so then we get to the second paragraph. And this last sentence that we read, to be doomed to an alcoholic death or to live on a spiritual basis are not always easy alternatives to face. Well, for who? A normal person would say, give me the chemotherapy. You just told me I'm dying of cancer, that it's a hopeless case. Give me the chemo now. Or if I have the desperation of a drowning man, I am not going to look at you and say, but I only want a pink inner tube. Don't send an inflatable down the road to me that isn't in the right colors. But I'm the kind of person that will do that. I will die for my right to kill myself and prove that I'm better than you or that I'm just different from you. So to be doomed to an alcoholic death is, I don't know, it might not be that bad. It might not be that bad. Like if I'm dying and I lose a lot of weight, I'm going to look great. I'm going to look great in the casket. People will take pictures. They'll remember me. I'll look like a movie star. Like I've got all these crazy ideas about how it's good. But the absolute truth of the matter is the juice is never worth the squeeze. And my life was one flipping squeeze after another, waking up with a script on how the day needs to unfold, constantly jostling and maneuvering for position, immediately deciding in every moment, this is good, that's bad, this is right, that's wrong, this is a winner, this is a loser. Like there's some invisible race in life. And I know how to quantify and categorize all of you so that I can always be the winner. But the winner of what? I wasn't winning anything, but I kept on going. I kept redoubling my efforts because I would climb to the top of some ladder and I would look around and there would be absolutely nothing there. And instead of thinking, you might be on the wrong track here, Amy. No, I'll just keep skedaddling. I'll just keep going. I don't know where I'm going, but I'm going to attempt to look really good while I'm doing it. And that's all that's going to matter, except I didn't look good to anybody, not even to myself. So the truth about lies, more about alcoholism. And now I'm rolling into We Agnostics, We Self-Reliant, that tells me about the cycle of suck that comes when I try to live by self-will alone. I am locked in a cage with me. The most power I'm ever going to have, the best thinking I'm ever going to have is my own. And the thing that I fear more than anything else in the whole world is that I will always be alone. And not just like sitting in a room by myself, reading a book, kicking back, but out on the edge of the universe, forlorn, forsaken, so broken that you can't even make eye contact with me. That's who I think I am when I get here. So I come to step two and I realize that I do suffer from some insanity. And that's a good thing because I need to believe that I have a need to be restored. Otherwise, this isn't going anywhere for me. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thanks, Andrew. All right. Second reading, page 45. Lack of power. That was our dilemma. We had to find a power by which we could live, and it had to be a power greater than ourselves, obviously. But where and how were we able to find this power? Well, that's exactly what this book is about. Its main object is to enable you to find a power greater than yourself, which will solve your problem. Jump into page 46. Much to our relief, we discovered we did not need to consider another's conception of God. Our own conception, however inadequate, was sufficient to make the approach and to effect a contact with him. As soon as we admitted the possible existence of a created intelligence, a spirit of the universe underlying the totality of things, we began to be possessed of a new sense of power and direction, provided we took to another simple steps. We found that God does not make too hard terms with those who seek him. To us, the realm of the spirit is broad, roomy, all-inclusive, never exclusive or forbidding to those who earnestly seek. It is open, we believe, to all men.
Turn to top on that.
Oh, okay, yes.
Shit.
You're what, dude?
Yeah, it's not the whole thing. I'm sorry, I got nothing.
It's on.
Yeah. Oh boy. Yeah, blew the whole thing. That was all I had. I was just sitting here in awe. Oh man, I could fake it easily, but I'm too tired. I'm just gonna let it ride. I'm gonna tell you, Amy set the tone out here. I was tired and I came in here and she said, "Do you want to go pray?" And I said, "God, yes." And you know. And we did the set-aside prayer, and that's something I got to keep doing, especially with step two. You know, it was my idea when I came in here. I spent a month per step, and I spent an entirety of February trying to understand what step two meant to me. You know, I was 2 months sober, so it was pretty foggy, and I thought that I did it once, and it was done. I'm like, I had this step two experience, and it's done. You know, I'm under the impression now it pushes me through all the steps, you know, when I'm suffering through a step four, it's the hope that pushes me along. When I'm insane, it is that constant thing that I can turn back to that restores me to sanity. And I believe that. And I believe that. I know that that's true. Like I get wrapped up. You know, I think the world's caving in. I think my problems are piling up. I think I'm going to live in this craziness forever. But I've had this significant spiritual experience that I can rely on. I've come to believe that it can happen through anything. So, you know, I'm able to turn to this step all the time. All the time. I mean, like I said, it is the one that just puts one foot in front of the other. It's the one when I'm writing these steps out and I'm tired of being wrong about every situation that I've viewed. And I get myself, you know, I've been putting myself in, let's say, your shoes, if you piss me off, and I try to look at myself and this guy that's full of ego and this guy that wants to be validated. You know, and it's the one that keeps that pen to that paper that shows me where I've been dishonest, shows me where I've been selfish and self-seeking. And this pen, step two, this hope is what keeps this ink flowing out. I know somebody is going to feel this when I say this in here. If you've had a significant step four experience and gotten to understand the discipline of this, at first I would write these words out and I'd analyze them as they came. And towards the end of it, every synapse inside of my brain was shut off. There were no longer electrons firing. It was heart pen, and I would just write, and it would show me the truth about these situations, to where I'd read this piece of paper when I was done, I'd be shocked at what just came out about the truth of myself. And is this hope, you know, that I got from this initial spiritual experience that it just stays there, that just continues to sing, and it's that trust, at least to that trust in a God that can help me with what ails me. That's all I got. Thanks.
Yeah.
Lack of power, that was our dilemma. So here's what's wrong with me. I do not have the power to live out my moral and philosophical convictions. I mean, even if I had any, because I didn't. I mean, I kind of woke up every day and thought, I better get while the getting's good, and I better screw you before you get a chance to screw me. I really believe the world was a hostile place, and that either you were all in for me or you were all out against me. And so I turned every moment, every relationship, every conversation into a battlefield where I needed to do whatever it would take to attain supremacy. And supremacy for me is, I mean, of course, I look great. I sound great. You think I'm great. I'm feeling pretty good. And what comes next is under my control. Because I don't want to show up in a moment and think to myself, anything could happen here. Unless I have a step two in place. Because that enables me to show up in life, to come into the living edge of a moment where anything at all could happen, where I have no idea what comes next, where I'm not imposing everything I think I know that happened before onto the situation, and I'm just wide open. My brain's checked, you know, kind of clicked back, and I'm just have an open heart. That is absolutely impossible for me to do if I am not certain that there is a loving God who is holding me, who has a plan that is even better than my own. And that better be pretty darn good, because I am still years into this deal offended every time I read about our little plans and designs, because I don't have little plans and designs. I have visions of a magnificent future where hopefully some of you will be on the crack operating team where we are the spearheads of God's ever advancing creation. Those are the kind of little plans and designs that I have. Except they're all about the greater glorification of Amy. And that tends to piss some of you off. So lack of power. I cannot make myself be any different than what I am right now. I think I thought for a while that I was coming into AA and it was going to make me a good person and I was going to be virtuous and I was going to be wholesome. That did not happen. But what is happening is that I am becoming whole and I'm able to show up in front of you and tell you the unvarnished, I mean, a little varnish. I mean, I love to tell a good story, but I'm able to show up in front of you and tell you the bad news about me. And even more important, I'm able to show up in front of you and let you tell me the bad news about me, because I need to change and I cannot change myself. So this lack of power, it's operative all the way through. I do not have the power to separate myself from alcohol. Interesting terminology there. Writers do not use the passive voice. But the passive voice in the big book indicates powerlessness. I didn't separate myself from alcohol. I got separated from alcohol. I didn't choose not to drink today. Alcohol is my drug of no choice. If I could have stopped, I would have. I would have. I was tired of making my mother cry. I was tired of having my teachers and the people around me tell me that I was dangling over the pit of hell by a thread. And at any moment, I would be in the lake of burning acid for an infinity. I was worn out on that stuff. I mean, I don't even know if you could call that frothy emotional appeal. It was like hellacious emotional appeal. But that didn't stop me. It certainly did not stop me. So if lack of power is my dilemma, then access to power is going to be my solution. And how do I access power? By working the steps. It's an effort. It's work. It's not fairy dust. It's not just go to meetings and don't drink. It's not 90 meetings in 90 days. It's not do a lot of hard fellowshipping. It's not let go and let God, like you can just, you know, I don't know, have a hallelujah chorus and release it into the heavens. It's work. And so step two, there's nowhere else to go after step one, but step two. I've just found out that I have a death sentence, that I have a permanent disability, that it is permanent, it is progressive, it is fatal. And even if I manage to get separated from the substance and the physical allergy is not dogging my every step, I've got this mental twist. I'm walking around the face of the earth with a mind that cannot differentiate the true from the false. I suffer strange mental blank spots. What? And I think I'm the smartest person in the room, and that's what I'm operating with. So I have to get access to power, whatever the power is. And I really thought for a long time, before I go on to step three, I better know exactly who God is. And I definitely came in here with the God of my misunderstanding, kind of a combination of Santa Claus, who was making a list of who'd been naughty and who'd been nice, with Zeus, who had a lightning bolt and he was up on a throne and he had long flowing hair. Good looking men always feature in these things. But anyway, long flowing hair and the lightning bolt that he was going to zap me in the tail with every time I stepped out of line. And I still have days where I think there's somebody walking around with a clipboard taking notes on what I'm doing and marking down how frequently I get it wrong. And what this chapter is going to do for me, one of the greatest gifts I'm getting after I'm separated from alcohol, is going to ask me to take a look at my old ideas, my fixed ideas, my superstitions, traditions. It's going to tell me that I've been separated from God by pomp, by circumstance. It's going to ask me to take a look at the fact that I am the weak link in the chain between God and me. I am the weak link. Because alcohol is no longer separating me from God. It is I who am separating me from God. My idea that God needs me to be perfect. And I know I'm not perfect, so I guess I'm screwed. And then, of course, I transfer that onto you. And I think if God needs me to be perfect in order for me to be loved, you probably need me to be perfect in order to be loved. And so now I'm back at that thing, my greatest fear, that I will always be alone, that I will never be worthy. And so not only have I been removed from my humanity and turned into this thing that is a heat-seeking missile for approval, applause, and affirmation, I also am walking around with what some people call a hole in their soul, but I just think of it as this black hole of unworthiness, of not good enough, not good enough, not good enough. You know, all of my resentments are covering up that not good enough, not good enough, not good enough. You know, Julia will not flip and agree to speak here at Simple Actions. I am resentful that every time I ask her, she says no. How dare anyone say no to me? It is my ambition that it be easy all the time for me to do my job. But you know what? I'm really afraid that Julia just doesn't like me that much. So here's the dark side of self-centeredness. I think it's all about me. And that's what crushes me, is that I think it's all about me. There's no way out of this prison that I have built, that I am living inside with the real tyrannical God, my ego. I operate up here in a control tower using my big brain as a higher power, and it is feeding me information all the time, and I am processing reality in ways that are horribly inaccurate. I'm sure Julia never thinks about me at all. She loves me, of course. I get it all wrong because lack of power is my dilemma. I do not have the power to live the way I'd like to live. And as I move on in this process, I realize I do not have the power to live the way that God made me to live. So not only am I going to be reborn in this process, my life is going to be recreated. I'm going to be restored to the way that I was born, with nothing but love around me, nothing but grace. My current favorite definition of a higher power is a phrase, I can't remember what chapter it's in, but standing in the presence of infinite power and love. What could possibly go wrong if I'm standing in the power, in the presence of infinite power and love? And this is the way to get there. Thanks.
Thanks, Amy. All right, continuing on. Third reading, page 47. We needed to ask ourselves but one short question.
Do I now believe, or am I willing to believe, that there is a power greater than myself? As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we empathetically assure him that he is on his way. It has been repeatedly proven among us that upon the simple cornerstone, a wonderfully effective spiritual structure can be built. Page 568, Appendix 2. Most of us think this awareness of a power greater than ourselves is the essence of spiritual experience. Our more religious members call it God conscious. Most empathetically, we wish to say that any alcoholic capable of honestly facing his problem in the light of our experience can recover, provided he does not close his mind to all spiritual concepts. He can only be defeated by an attitude of intolerance or belligerent denial.
Yeah, I'm just going to share a little experience with some out of We Agnostics. I'm going to cut right to where it tells me God's everything or nothing, and he's either all the time or never. Paraphrase there. That blew my mind. That really is kind of a flip of a coin for me, because I, like I said, I came in with this unfiltered spiritual experience with no, I was indifferent. I had no prejudice one way or the other. It wasn't a concern of mine. My concern was booze. So I'd never really taken a spiritual path or had any need for it. Why? When I was the God. And so I come to this part in We Agnostics, and it gives me this proposal, this coin flip, whether God is or God isn't. And I debated both ways. I tried to figure out which way was better for me in my alcoholism, because, I could have chose either one. I mean, I made a flow chart, and I considered all the different things that if God is, how my life would end up. And then I wrote all the things that if God isn't, how my life would end up. And I charted this thing out, and there were some perks. There were some perks to both. There really was. I mean, I swear to God. And there was, there's a lack of accountability. There's not somebody watching me all the time with no God. And, just this nothingness. And I like this idea of what, who cares, you know, whatever. And that was appealing. But then I started writing this one, what if God is? And it kept going and it kept going. And this flow chart went past this table, and this one where God isn't ended right here. It hit a wall and there's nowhere else for it to go. And, I'm like, all right, well, you know, I'm just on this floating rock, aimlessly floating through space. And when I die, I'm in the ground, worms eat me. And that's about a wrap. And that's where it ends. But if I consider the spiritual path, I can play around with that all I want. There's some reincarnation if I want to do it. There's some pearly gates if I want to do that. There's all kinds of different directions. And this one ends right here, where I'm in the ground, worms eat me. And, for lack of a better reason, I went with the funner one. I said, buckle up, buttercup, we're going to do this thing. And I started calling my religious family members. I called my aunt and said, guess what? God's everything now. I decided. And the alternative was, I have one person I can call if I chose no. I have one friend, Atheist Dave. I was going to call him and be like, I'm on your side, bro. Like, this is great. There ain't no reason to do nothing. This is fantastic. What a way to be. But, like, it's just got a grim ending, dude. Like, I don't know. Like, so have you considered, just for lack of having a funner time through this thing? Like, just fuck it. There's a God. Yeah. And so I went with the spiritual path for lack of a better reason. And man, and it pushed me through it, man. And then it got real thick. That decision got real thick for me. It got heavier as I went. I was like, there was more conditions. God didn't have many conditions of me when I came here. And he started to develop some conditions for me to live. And they started to mean something to me. And I started to see the effect from the conditions that that he had for me. And it slowly won over my heart. And I'm absolutely an example of someone that came to believe. I came from absolutely no concept to, man, I'm a little sunbeam nowadays, dude. It's me and God. We're riding tight. I'm in God's limo, dude. My, every time a thought goes through my brain, I swear to God that is not selfish and self-centered, when it's like, help this guy, show up here. Someone asked you to speak, be there and speak. That's God. It's God. I didn't care. I didn't care about you. I didn't. So every time it crosses my mind to be of service to my man and properly align my will with the God of my understanding, that is a power greater than myself, because it wasn't there. So I faithed it till I made it. Absolutely. The moment God is, it landed on heads, baby. That's right. Yeah. I thought we were going to know.
Oh, okay. As soon as a man can say that he does believe or is willing to believe, we emphatically assure him that he is on his way. So again, I'm the weak link. I don't need to figure out who God is. I don't need to define the parameters of the relationship. I just need to show up with an open mind. I believe in a God as the result of the results. Unlike the God of my childhood that demanded blind faith from me, because I guess he was, I don't know, a little girl and petty, the God of my understanding today just needs me to show up with an open mind and an open heart. He will do the rest. And so I don't have to start with blind faith. I just have to start with a willingness to believe. And this willingness to believe, when I do a few more steps and I'm not dead and life is getting a little bit better, this willingness to believe turns into a belief. And then I do a few more steps and that willingness to believe to the belief has turned into a faith that works under all conditions. I think that probably the wiring of my divine DNA got corrupted somewhere along the line. And this process is what cleans that out and restores me to the factory settings. And the factory settings are, I am a child of God. You are a child of God. We are all on a level playing field. It is not possible, and not much is required for me. It is not possible for me to lose this love. It is not possible for me to gain more than the portion of love that I'm already receiving. And I don't even have to believe in any of this to be receiving it. But what this process does for me is it takes me to a place where I'm getting results. God doesn't have to burn a bush in front of me. I don't have to win the lottery. I just get to wake up each day and there's a little bit more space in my chest all the time. Instead of being occupied with who said what or who didn't look at me a certain way or how much money I owe the IRS or whatever it is, I do owe money to the IRS. But you know what? It means I'm making money. So my mind gets changed all the time. I could look at it this way, but when I introduce God into the equation, the truth is really this way. So I don't mean that in a like toxic positivity, you know, it's all good kind of thing, or a spiritual bypassing thing that if I'm a good girl and I write inventory, then God is going to fix my feelings. I don't mean that at all. What I do mean is that I can show up with just that open mind, just that open heart, just the understanding that I need help and I cannot help myself. And all of the things that I have used as a higher power, all of the false dependencies that I've had, you know, whether it's my boss or my family or a man or a bank account, all of the things that I have used as lower powers have gotten me nowhere at all. So maybe I'll give this a whirl. I mean, I can't say that I flipped a coin. I absolutely believed in God when I got here. I just thought he was a jackwagon, you know, just not friendly, constantly watching me and preparing horrible, horrible infinite tortures for me when I finally dropped dead. And I find out that my life has already been saved. I'm sitting here. My life has already been saved. You have already saved my life by showing me what God looks like, by accepting me in, because that's what I've been looking for my whole life. Connection, direction, security, self-worth. I want these things more than anything, and I don't know how to get them. I've used all kinds of methods to attempt to get them, working so hard that I would have gold stickers from my boss, making so much money that I would never run out and I would feel secure. Whatever it is, getting so much education that I could be sure that I was the smartest person in the room and thus secure my own future. But I haven't been able to get the deal done. I can get but so far over that bridge of reason, but I can't get myself onto the desired shore of faith. And that's where fellowship comes in. You have your hands stretched out in welcome for me. You're smiling. You're letting me know that it's going to be okay. Something has worked. You're all still here. If it works for you, maybe it will work for me. So the first way that I find out about God is by what's shining in your eyes. And I have to say that the description and a vision for you about walking into a room where there's an electric and stimulating atmosphere, where there's an indefinable look on the faces of the people there, that the feeling is indescribable. I want to be a part of that because that's what makes me keep coming back. That's what makes me not think that I got separated from alcohol. My life is not a crap show. Everything is relatively calm. I'm getting old. I'm not getting into that much trouble anymore. I'm really all good. No, I'm not. I wake up every day with untreated alcoholism. I need this as much today when the issue is not alcohol as I did when I walked in here and I was absolutely sure that the worst of my problems was that I could not stop drinking. And then maybe if that got under control, the worst of my problems was just that things weren't going my way. And y'all would probably show me how to fix that all up. It turns out that it's all God. That was the last thing that I wanted this to be about, for sure. And it turns out that it's the greatest thing. It's everything I ever hoped for, and it keeps getting better. Thanks.
All right, I'm going to skip ahead to the last reading. On page 55, actually, we were fooling ourselves, for deep down in every man, woman, and child is a fundamental idea of God. It may be obscured by calamity, by pomp, by worship of other things, but in some form or other is there. For faith in a power greater than ourselves is a miraculous demonstration of that power in human lives, our facts as old as man himself. We can only clear the ground a bit. If our testimony helps sweep away prejudice, enables you to think honestly, encourages you to search diligently within yourself, then if you wish, you can join us on the broad highway. With this attitude, you cannot fail. The consciousness of your belief is sure to come to you.
A couple minutes for each, Jojo.
Yeah, man, God, that is the greatest promise in the world right there. With this attitude, you cannot fail. With this attitude, you cannot fail. I can't fail. I can't fail with this attitude. Man, I return to that all the time because I think I'm going to fail a lot. And it's true. Somewhere in there, I forgot, it says, there is a solution that says a spiritual solution that solves all our problems. And every time I'm working with another guy, I always say, how many? Like, oh, I'm like, oh, and it's with this attitude, I cannot fail. And that's absolutely been my experience. It is absolutely a ego leveling process that allows me to find this God of my understanding. When I'm able to see myself from your shoes or see myself from any other viewpoint than outside of my own skull, I'm able to see this person that's fixable and this person that's trying his best and this person that, can keep moving forward. I got to tell you, in my head, I return to that all the time. I ride with it, man. I've been reading this Emmett Fox thing, and he talks about this spiritual key, and he talks about this this key that I can turn. And I suffer from anxiety and depression, the alcoholic condition, and I'll get spun out fast out here, man. I use this thing. I use with this attitude, I cannot fail. And I say, God is with me. God is through me. God runs through me. God's got a plan. God knows better than me. Whatever plan I got for myself is far outweighed by whatever the Creator's got for me. And when I turn to that little cave, that little secret spot with that attitude, I don't fail. And it's unbelievable. That's all I got.
Thank you.
I think this is a really important sentence. We can only clear the ground a bit. What this means is that I am responsible for enlarging my spiritual life. There is more. more will be revealed. I can't just assume that if I sit in these chairs enough, I will become spiritual by osmosis. And then right after that, it gives me some directions that basically are the steps. Sweep away prejudice, 1 and 2. Enable me to think honestly. Search diligently within myself, 4. And then join us on the broad highway. So I'm going to be walking this out with you all every single day in 10, 11, and 12. I am actually going to be working these steps every single day for the rest of my life, if I'm lucky. Maybe it works for some people to do it once and they go on their way rejoicing. I don't know. But I have a rapidly rebuilding ego. It gets me into trouble all of the time. And only by being in this process every single day is it possible for me to have the broad, roomy, and inclusive heart that is how we describe at the beginning of this chapter as the realm of the spirit. I believe that if that's what God provides for us, it's also what I need to provide for those around me. And this is the only way to do it. Thanks.
Sydney. All right, let's give Amy and JoJo a round of applause. We're going to pass it down the seven tradition basket. The seven tradition states every AA group ought to be fully self-supporting, declining outside contributions. While contributions cover each group's rent and other expenses, the seventh tradition is essential at every level of AA service. It is both a privilege and a responsibility for groups and members to ensure that not only their group, but also their intergroup, central office, local services, district, area, and the general service office remain self-supporting. This keeps AA free of outside influence that might divert us from our primary purpose to help other alcoholics who still suffer. So we have QR codes in there for Venmo and also PayPal. You can sign up for emails at simpleactions.net. Our group endeavors to provide a safe meeting place for all attendees and encourages each person here to contribute to fostering a secure and welcoming environment in which our meeting can take place. Are there any AA related announcements? I have one. We are hosting a workshop called Effective Sponsorship. It will be on Zoom Tuesday, September 16th, 7 p.m. Chris R. from Ingram, Texas. We have these yellow flyers located on the table over there. You can take out your phone and put it in the calendar, but you can take flyers to give to friends.
What are they? Yeah.
Simple Actions is a home group. If you are interested in joining our home group or in need of a sponsor, please hang out after the meeting. Home group members, please raise your hands. We have a literature table over here. Books are priced at cost. If you are interested in buying one, come see me or any home group member. Sponsorship in AA is yours for the asking. We urge you, do not delay. If you have questions or like additional information about sponsorship, I will be available here after we close the meeting. Please feel free to talk to me, or if you're shy, you can send an email to info@simpleactions.net and someone will respond to you. Smokers, please use the butt can provided outside and stay well away from the church doors. All meeting audio recordings and upcoming events are posted on our website, simpleactions.net. All are invited and encouraged to join our join us for fellowship, the meeting after the meeting that will be held at Cafe Stella's down the road here on Colonial Ave. If you've gone past the tracks, you've gone way too far. Again, let's thank Amy and JoJo for... Thank you all participated. After the Lord's Prayer, everyone will have a chance to come up and thank them in person. And Ben has volunteered to read the last two paragraphs on page 164. Hello, Ben. Right on. All right, let's circle around. We have a fantastic way to close the meeting. Whose father?
Our father. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. and lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, the power, and the glory, forever and ever. Amen.
Keep going.